How have you not seen this?
Welcome back to How Have You Not Seen This. As always, I'm your host, Dustin Meadows. I am joined once again by my guest host, Taylor Reinhart.
Yeah, hi, I'm Taylor Reinhart.
And special guest, Erica Van Hyck.
Hello.
And we just watched The Dark Knight, our second installment in Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. Great movie, set a ridiculous amount of box office records when it came out. Praised largely for the story, especially for Heath Ledger's performance as the Joker in this film, and also just being the greatest homage to Heat ever, since I don't think homage to Heat is a genre that exists. Erica, you've actually seen this.
I have.
So, I guess my question is, how have you seen this but not the other Batman films?
I think it boils down to just a matter of like when they came out. The most recent one came out when I was like not in the country, so I couldn't see that. And The first one came out, I was pretty young. And this one came out when I was in like eighth grade or freshman year in high school. And so that's the time when you're like finally allowed to like go to the movies without your parents.
Yeah.
And like, and so I saw this, I think, like actually twice in theaters.
Oh, nice.
With people and like my middle school friends.
I'd just like to say that the first movie I saw in theaters without my parents, fifth grade, 51st Dates.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah,
I wasn't sheltered.
Okay.
Okay, I'm not sure if this was the first one I saw with my parents. But like that's the age when you're like a mall rat and
you're at movies
all the time.
I think the first movie I saw without my parents was John Carpenter's Vampires.
I don't know what that is.
It's a John Carpenter movie about vampires.
Oh,
it's actually really good. We'll talk about that all later. So that being said, we have all seen it. But what are your thoughts on it, Eric?
I loved it.
Okay.
As much, because I remember loving it when I was like 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if I would still like it 5 years later.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not right. Yeah. No, I guess I was like 12.
No, roundabout, like five or six. This came out in 2008.
Yeah, so I didn't know if I'd still like it as much. But I did. Yeah.
Good, maybe even more, actually.
I really, really liked it.
Cool. Taylor, your thoughts on this?
I am a little bit more anti. I think the first 40, 45 minutes, even up to an hour, I think it's perfect. I think the movie turns on one major scene that we can discuss, but that is the penthouse scene where Bruce is throwing the party for Harvey. Then I think that the movie starts shifting into absurd territory from there, from a really, really cool start.
Okay. I love this entire trilogy. I go back and forth between them. When Dark Knight Rises came out, after my first year, I was like, I think this is my favorite in the trilogy. And then I watched it again, and I was like, no, I still think it's my favorite. And then I got it this past Christmas, and I watched it again, and I was like, I don't think this is my favorite.
Yeah.
I think Dark Knight is it for me, though. And I think it's largely because, like I mentioned at the beginning, there's a lot of, like, it just reminds me of Heat, a Michael Mann film with Pacino and De Niro that's really fucking good. And it's, like, grounded more in reality. And then, as you mentioned, it gets to a point where it kind of takes a turn for the absurd. So, yeah, let's talk about the penthouse scene. Let's talk about where the movie shifts for you, Taylor.
The movie shifts when the Joker has another great monologue. He's had, you know, a few of them up to that point. And we're starting to get a great glimpse into him, and then he shoots the window and throws Rachel out.
Yep.
Batman leaps off a skyscraper, they land on a car, and she goes, whoa, let's not do that again, and the Joker presumably packs it up and goes home.
Yeah.
He's just like, well, okay, Senator Patrick Leahy, it was great to see you. I'm just going to head out the way I came.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That Senator Patrick Leahy also makes a cameo in Batman and Robin.
Yeah,
because he's such a self-professed Batman fan. You mentioned the jumping out the building. I swore, like, the last time I watched is like they're fun. And I was like, oh yeah, he shoots like his grappling gun up, like and like helps to slow down the fall. No, he just straight fucking lands on a car.
Yeah,
and, like so him falling like hundreds of yards and like landing on his back on a car, fine. Harvey Dent falls 20 feet and dies. Like, what? Like,
Batman falls the same fall, but we imagine that his body armor is filled with just the nicest pillows.
Just marshmallows? he drops Eric Roberts' character, Sal Moroni.
Yep.
He drops him from a higher distance than Harvey Dent fell. And he just gets, like, maybe, like, a broken ankle. We see him with a cane later.
Well, Harvey had no skin to protect him from the fall. Half his body. So maybe he just fell out of that half of his body.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
All his bones just came right
also,
out.
Also, they just sacrificed any semblance of, like, realism for Burns.
Oh,
just
what
for
the
coolness.
Yeah.
Because at first, he's like, we hear you won't accept painkillers, even though you're in agonizing pain. Are you kidding me? A. And then B, Harvey walks up, he's like, oh, let me do that shot with my burned face, and the alcohol just seeps out of his burned face. Which is awesome, admittedly, but just ridiculous.
He looks like one of the monsters from, like, Dead Alive.
Yeah.
Or, like, some other equally ridiculous, like, zombie, or, like, even Return of the Living Dead. The movie where zombies start audibly saying the word brains. Like, that's what the left half of his face looks like.
I enjoyed that he was wearing the same suit that he got burned in. Like, the hospital didn't
just,
give him a gown.
They just pressed it
They're
and gave
like,
it to
oh,
him.
Here's your suit back.
Well, and then it, like, it's got those... So, like, it's got, like, that comic book Two-Face look to it later on. I was like, all right, come on. He had to have had something else.
Right, yeah. No, the hospital, and there's so many of, like, the people just getting their personal effects back. One of the things I think, so, like, to prove that the characters are smart in these films, because I believe that Batman in the Nolan trilogy is very stupid.
Yes.
Just over and over again.
Yes.
But I think to prove that they're smart, they continue to outwit just unwitting manual labor people. Like, Lucius Fox walks into Lao's tower and, like, has two phones, and so the guy tries to give him his phone back, and Lucius is like, but I already have my phone. And the guy goes, okay, time to ruin this corporation. I'm just gonna put this phone back
yep,
here.
Yep, time to not question anything.
Yeah, all the cops, just like the individual cops, the Joker's just like, hey, you want to know which of your friends is a coward? And that cop presumably just loses to a handcuffed man who's been beaten.
Well, it's not handcuffed, because Gordon uncuffs
right,
him.
Right, Gordon
but still, like, yeah, it's... The entire trilogy, there are moments where a major plot point is hinged upon somebody's pride or stupidity. Like, case in point, we watched Batman Begins yesterday. The cop just letting the League of Shadows dudes across the bridge. Not sure where it is. Oh, hey, here's this cop I've never seen before in a spot bin. Nah, checks out.
Speaking of cops we've never seen before, every single cop in Gotham is on the streets, and they don't notice the guy with the Joker scars in the honor card.
Yeah, they're... Oh, man.
Huge problems in this film.
Like I said, I'm saying these things as a person who genuinely does love Nolan's Batman trilogy. They're not without their faults.
One thing, and some more glaring than others.
Yeah.
I want to hear your opinion on this. One problem that I have with this movie is that a lot of the... a lot of what the Joker had set up was hinged on Batman, like, discovering all, like, finding the fingerprint on the bullet and going to that apartment.
It's a very specific
and
plan.
So either, like, A, the Joker really, really fucking knows the Batman, which I think that's a little implausible.
At this early in the game, yes.
B, the Joker just all over the fucking city has, like, like, he's like, maybe he'll find the fingerprint on the bullet.
Yeah.
Or, like, maybe he'll go to this other apartment when I leave. Like, he either...
Yeah.
Really
no matter what, I'm
going to
put oil drums everywhere.
Right. Everywhere in the city is hooked up to oil drums.
Well, that's the point where they capture the Joker. Like, that's all set up so that he can extract Lao from the major crimes unit holding cells. It's so specific.
Right.
Because it's contingent on him assuming that Batman is going to be in the interrogation room so he can give him the information to get all the cops out of there. It's contingent upon him getting his one phone call so he can blow up the place.
Also contingent on every cop in the building falling over except for him standing there happily.
Yeah.
Which also happens with Two-Face when Two-Face clicks his seatbelt and can walk away from the terrible car crash that kills two people.
Yeah, the driver's absolutely like, maybe you shouldn't have flipped a coin. Maybe you should have just shot Sal Moroni instead of like, well, flip a coin. Oh, I don't get to kill him. I'll chance a car crash, sure. and it sucks too, because like, I feel like with these kinds of movies, I feel like we're in an age of filmmaking where we, like, the directors and writers feel like they have to try and like throw in these clever twists and like these overlit, like everything has to be an Ocean's 11 heist.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was like, look, the Joker just fucking kills people. Like, he's obviously very smart and calculating, but like, there's a point where like, oh, I'm watching a grown man in a bat costume, and then you're like, I don't know if Joker's plan would have worked this specifically.
Yeah, I don't think
it's frustrating because like and you see it so much in movies now where like plots just hinge on those exact details.
Mm-hmm.
And the simplest thing: what if Joker had died when Batman upended a goddamn semi?
Yeah,
There's no way to know. Like, what if the helicopter he tripwired had crashed into the semi?
Right.
Like, there's so many variables. Like, you cannot possibly account for that. And it looks cool. And then, like, you see it's like, oh, man, that was a really great plan. And then you realize, that's fucking bullshit. How could he have accounted for literally every possible factor?
But as he tells Harvey Dent, he's not a man that makes plans.
That's a fucking lie. And I hate it. Because that is such a great moment. That's such a great assessment of the kind of character that the Joker really is. But then I was like, you're a fucking liar. You plan shit down to the goddamn detail. Clearly.
Yeah.
You are a fucking schemer.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things that's a huge problem, and this is like Nolan a couple times, is like a lot of really important lines get garbled really badly.
Yeah.
So like one of them is the Joker. I mean, I swear to God, Ledger says chaos is fear. Like, it sounds so much like that. If you look at the like subtitles, if you read the script, he says chaos is fair, and that changes everything.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very, very important line that he messed up. The other one is Harvey saying, or Gordon saying, well, if I didn't work with any cops at MCU, or that you hadn't investigated internal affairs, I wouldn't be working with anyone. Those lines go by so fast.
Yeah.
Harvey, we never get the nuance to his character. It's only like a little bit. He's just super good, and then he's hurt and just flailing around from there.
Yep.
Which is a, big problem.
One of the things I want to talk about, I've already mentioned my love for Cillian Murphy as Scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw this, I was so happy that he pops up like in the first 10 minutes. Like, he has 2 minutes of screen time. But again, in that 2 minutes, he fucking knocks it out of the park again. Like, he captures like a classic Batman, like when like all the fake Batmans show up and then the Tumblr comes rolling through and he just looks over and says, that's more like it. I was like, bam, that's a Batman villain. Like, again, with one line, he fucking nails it. Like, and everything. And then, like, even when Batman's leaving, he's like, oh, that's not my assessment.
That's not my diagnosis.
Yeah.
Writing like, quip.
It's,
love it.
Oh, it's so fucking good. And it makes me really sad that Scarecrow didn't get a whole movie devoted to him.
Yeah.
Because, like, Cillian Murphy is so great in that role, and it's definitely the most consistent character throughout the trilogy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's because he was only in it for small doses, like, but like more so than any character, Scarecrow's consistent. He's in keeping with what that character is, and Cillian Murphy is just, oh, guys, come on, I can go on all day about Cillian Murphy.
He's
so fucking good.
He's so great. It was good to see him again. I remember in theaters thinking this is going to be a good movie from there. The heist, it starts with the heist, then we get the parking garage, so, you know, being angry at Rises and Begins for not showing Batman for an hour. They get Batman on screen quick.
Like, yeah, they jump into it real quick.
Yeah, and so that's really cool. And then the classic Joker plot of finding important people. Batman number one, the first ever Batman comic, it introduces the Joker, and he goes around killing important people, and he's going to do it. So they do that, and they do it really well. Through the first one, it's perfect. I really do think, like, the perfect live-action Batman happens in the first, like, 45.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, when he's announcing his targets and everything, it's so fucking good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool.
And I'm angry that I can't think of the name of that story now.
Well, I almost said Case of the Criminal Syndicate, but that's just the first ever Batman story. I don't know exactly what it's called.
I know there's been a variation on it that I'm more familiar with. It's like The Joker Strikes at Midnight or something like that. Where like
Death Strikes at Midnight, maybe?
Something like that. Because they do that episode in the animated series, too, where Batman disguises
himself. Oh,
Laughing Fish. Yeah, Laughing Fish. That's what it was. Yeah. That's really good.
So have you guys both read all of the comics?
No, not all.
Okay, it's impossible. Yeah, how many? Impossible. So like how many?
Batman's existed since...
He's been in publication for over 7 years. Yeah.
Really?
Okay. It would be... I find out what the major storylines are and I read those.
Okay.
Because... And also, like, 75 years, you're gonna find some filler in there.
Okay. Yeah. And they're, like...
There are entire decades of filler, too. So...
Oh, absolutely. They're really cool creators, too. Like, occasionally somebody really good will get a hold of the character, and that's when things mostly happen. Like, Val Moore gets a hold of the character, you get something great.
Yeah, all the Killing Joke.
Yeah, Paul Dini had a run on Detective Comics most recently that was killer good.
Yeah.
There's just a bunch of, like, random creators and artists that, like, I will follow no matter what they do.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how I handle it.
Actually, you mentioned Al Moore. Let's talk about Killing Joke, how it ties into this. Killing Joke, basically the premise of it is the Joker kidnaps Commissioner Gordon's daughter, kidnaps Commissioner Gordon, or no, he doesn't kidnap Commissioner Gordon's daughter. He shoots her and paralyzes her, then kidnaps Commissioner Gordon, basically in an effort to drive him insane to prove essentially what he's doing in the movie, that everyone is one bad day away from completely losing their shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he does that, and Batman even acknowledges it in here with like the fairy, like the social experiment with the bomb thing. He's like, are you just trying to prove that everyone is as ugly inside as you?
Which is a cool theme if we didn't do it through exactly what we talked about last time, the trolley experiment, which is literally what happened here. Erica detailed that philosophy last time, and it's so this one or the other crap. The Joker was building to two fairies maybe blowing each other up, and if not, he builds up. Like, all of that was just a build-up to this weird thing. I don't know. I hate the fairy scene
so much. Really? I really like that scene.
Oh, I despise
it. Because I thought that, even after seeing it, I forgot how it ended. And I predicted that one of the fairies would blow the other one up, obviously.
Yeah.
If I was in the fairy, I'd fucking blow the other fairy up immediately. And, I mean, maybe I don't like it because that's not realistic. Like, I think that one of those fairies would have
absolutely
come immediately, but I thought it was, like, a cool, like, I didn't predict that that's what would have happened.
Yeah,
and they made a good point with it, I think.
Yeah, I like the conceit that the convicted felon throws the detonator out. I like that spin on it. I do not like that the piece of shit civilian who was like, oh, well, they had their chance, blah, blah, blah. There's like, oh, no one wants to get their hands dirty, I'll do it. And then he fucking pusses out. I was like, look, man, I want to assume the best about people, but a lot of us are fucking garbage.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of, there's this frustrating scene in the very first Spider-Man, with Tobey Maguire, where, he has to save Mary Jane and the trolley thing. We talked about this too. And he's trying to like save him, and Green Goblin's like attacking him, and then these people start throwing rocks at him. These people who had moments earlier in the movie turned on Spider-Man. And then they're like, hey, you attack him, you attack all
of
us.
You mess with all of us.
I was like, oh, come on. And it was such a cheesy, like, that, because, like, it was post 9/11, so it was that.
But to
very...
be fair, it was the first thing post 9/11. Like,
yes,
in 2002, they edited, like, the Twin Towers out of it, so I was willing to give it that. Every Spider-Man movie after that has also fallen to that.
But, it's frustrating. Like, I can handle that mentality, but, like, consistency wise, it made no sense. Because earlier in the movie, like, people, like, genuinely were terrified. Like, they didn't know if they could trust Spider-Man. And then all of a sudden, they're like, oh, I guess the one dude is more scary than Spider-Man. So we'll take the devil we know, I guess.
Yeah. I just don't like anything about the fairy scene in general.
Right.
I just think it's a distraction from... cool things that are going on. I'm gonna do what you should have did 10 minutes ago is fairly absurd. I don't know. I think that like this movie is much more just offends much more than Batman Begins with just, like, stuffing ideals into the plot. And I don't know what Nolan's trying to say, but, like, here's the thing. Like, generally, when you look at who's, like, the most right in this film, I think the Joker is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, you, and you had said, like, I would probably blow them up, or, like, somebody would probably blow them up. So, like, this movie says, like, don't worry, we believe in the good guys, but the movie's clearly focused on the bad guys.
Yeah.
It loves the bad guys' philosophy. It proves the bad guys' philosophy. Batman, basically, Batman, it's the Patriot Act. I mean, it's all a big metaphor
absolutely.
For, like, we're going to invade everyone's mm-hmm. privacy, but only when we need it to stop this terrorist. Once we get the terrorist done,
well,
blow
then,
it all up.
And then Lucius has, like, that moral upstanding moment. And he's like, I cannot be a part of this. And he's like, all right, I'll do it this one time. He's like, no! You cannot, like, no, you can't make this big moral stand. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, because in the comics, too, Batman oversteps his fucking bounds a lot. Like, he's on, like, he's a great character, he's trained well, but a lot of times Batman is a fucking asshole. Like, he's cool to us because we're outside, but, like, everyone that works with him, everyone that's close to him, like, he's a son of a bitch. And he absolutely, like, does this in the movie with, like, the surveillance thing, and Lucius is just like, nah, I do not agree with this, but okay, I'll do it this one time
just
for all
this
time
once.
Sake.
I liked the line in the very beginning when Alfred was like, do you follow me around on my day off? And he was like, if you got a day off. He's like, fuck you, Alfred.
Yeah, fuck off, Alfred. You're not my dad.
Go,
he died in my arms.
Go back and clean my fucking penthouse. Like, you fuck.
Oh. I guess, let's talk about some of the things we did like. I know there were some in there.
Yeah. No, I can talk about that first hour and everything they get.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, the first hour is great. The extraction scene when Batman goes to Hong Kong to get Lao, that entire action sequence where he sets the charges and then storms the building and then like flies out, that's really fucking cool. And then there's another moment too, like still in, it was after the party scene when they make the assassination attempt on the mayor. But there's that scene where Batman's like examining the bullet hole fragment, like, and like doing all the stuff, like doing the different caliber bullets and everything. Like, I wish there was more of that, because like the detective element, like this is the only time in the movies that the detective element really gets played up with Batman.
Yeah, but I mean, still, he has to use machines, A, and B, when the actual reconstruction comes around, he's like, Lucius,
help
me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating, but this is the closest it comes to
it's
it.
True. That's true.
And Batman was, he went to school for criminology, right?
Yeah, like, he studied forensics,
he's
like, an acclaimed university.
Okay.
Like, he's fucking smart as shit.
Yeah, that makes sense, because, like, I kind of had forgotten about that, because you guys talked about that yesterday.
Yeah.
But
he's
I was
been
like,
everywhere. I mean, he goes and studies, like, with private eyes.
Like, yeah, like,
Britain.
Literally just across the
yeah.
world. Like, with Interpol, like, everything.
Yeah.
He has a ton of different mentors. Henri Ducard was actually a real, like, that was, like, the detective that he had studied on in the comics. So that was really cool when they brought Ducard to life. And then they crossed with Rachel Gould.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. So he's done all that.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, that scene where he, like, pulled the I was, like, annoyed with it because I was, like, A, just fucking let the cops do what they do.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, I'm just gonna fucking destroy your crime scene and destroy your ballistics and like...
But again, that, like, that's part of, like, that's what he does.
Right.
Yeah,
like, now
he says, give him a minute. That's very comic booky.
Yeah.
And then, but B, that was then an intended clue by the Joker. He was like, I'm gonna put...
Yeah.
Because that wasn't the Joker's thumbprint, right? That was the guy that lived in that apartment.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
That was a very intentional,
yeah.
like...
Which was,
I
again,
assumed
yeah,
about
yeah,
that.
A very specific thing. It was like... Oh, Batman's probably got a machine to test bullet calibers and reconstruct the bullet fragments. Sure.
Yeah.
Also, like, with Batman being an asshole thing, there's that scene where Batman takes the Pruitt building, like, during the ferry thing, where, like, the hostages are forced to, like, they're dressed up as the Joker's henchmen.
Yeah, that was
and, like,
cool.
And Gordon's even trying to tell him, like, no, like, you need to wait, like, this art thing, like, and he even is finally, like, look, you're stepping outside of your boundaries. Like, this is not cool.
Yeah.
Like, let SWAT do their job. And Batman's like, no, fuck you. I'm the only one who can.
Right, and that to me is Gary Oldman's finest moment, where he's holding up the gun futilely at Batman, he's screaming, "We have to save Dent. I have to save Dent. He jumps. It's probably the best moment Gary Oldman gets. And Gary Oldman gets a lot of meat in this.
Definitely.
That and when he's talking to young Bruce after his parents are murdered.
That's a great scene. My two
favorite moments with Gary Oldman. Let's talk about why Gary Oldman had to fake his death to drive a goddamn car.
What the fuck? Because he wasn't even really that high up on, like, Harvey Dent's just, like, fucking walking through the streets and, like, doing his shit. And he's like, "No, I have to fucking traumatize my children."
Yep.
And, like, pretend to be dead for, like, it was, like, two days at least.
Just a phone call.
He couldn't risk his family.
That's
his explanation, too.
Yeah.
That's his explanation to the mayor. That's his explanation to his wife.
Yeah.
Like, who justifiably slaps him.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, does not say, "You're sleeping somewhere else. Yeah. You're not allowed back here.
You're sleeping with Sarah Essen."
Right, yeah. But it's a really stupid plot point that's clearly manufactured for what it got in theaters, which was a round of applause for my theater.
Well, again, it was that unnecessary, like, too clever for its own good twist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, really, if you want to protect your family, get them out of Gotham.
Right.
Take them to...
That goes for everyone. Get the fuck out of this city.
Yeah.
Don't be a cop in the most dangerous city in the fucking world.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's very annoying. If we're talking about... So you mentioned the extraction scene. I do think it's super cool. But I think the coolest part is the beginning when Bruce is just standing on that building. He's getting ready to do it.
Yeah.
I think that, like, one thing these superhero movies so often don't do is just take a breath. And, like, that's a great moment where the movie has this super cool scene where it also, you know, it gets the tension going. I'm ready for a fucking throwdown.
Oh, man.
And that's super cool when that happens.
The fucking score in all of these movies... The Howard Zimmerman score is so good, especially in this one, because it's almost less score and more just like building ambient tones.
Mm-hmm.
Like the escort scene, like the where they're driving the SWAT trucks and the Joker attacks them, like that whole time, like just for like 2 minutes, just like it just builds. And I think the movie does that very well in all three of them.
I'm medium on the score because I like the classical score
a lot,
and I don't think it can really be topped, but I think it was a good call for what they were trying.
I think
they were trying to establish a big break for superhero movies.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it fits Batman.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a little more grounded. It's not as bombastic as, like, say, John Williams' Superman score.
Right, certainly.
I think it's much more appropriate to this character.
I miss the classic.
That's not at all what I meant. But that's very
funny.
That's
what you meant the classic score.
No.
Just the entire movie.
He missed Christian Bale answering the red phone under the glass.
Just
the sound effects when he punches a dog.
I imagine the sound effects of those dogs dying because he does kill those dogs.
Yeah, he throws them over the railing.
Well, they're people.
Yeah, what I love is that none of those dogs make a sound when they get thrown to their death.
No.
Because I thought I remembered that, too. I was like, oh, one of the dogs is going to go, "Arr!"
Yeah.
Like, no, that dog just falls silently to his death.
He just accepts it. He's like,
"Yeah,
this is the life I chose."
But, I mean, to be fair, like, because we have to assume it was the same fucking Rottweilers from the first scene.
Right.
So, like, fuck you. If you fucking bit me in that first scene, and then you bite me in a fucking high-rise, I'm throwing you over the fucking side. Because fuck you.
But not the Joker. But you're not the Joker.
Yeah. I won't kill. But I don't have to save these dogs.
Yeah.
Luckily,
just didn't
I know
save
the dogs
them
don't
them
have souls.
Yeah,
it's very funny. The dogs can lead us into talking about the Chechen. What do you think of the character of the Chechen? The guy who says, "My dogs are hungry."
The Chechen,
This entire movie, the stereotypes, and at least the first movie and this one, we're both a little awful.
Nothing like your only Chinese character saying, "I'm good with calculations," many times.
Yeah.
So many times.
I tell him you saved his life.
Gotham
must be around to die.
And even the like black bad guys were like, I don't like.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
all bad. Dude, I don't know.
Michael.
You should have did 10 minutes.
Yeah. Tommy Tiny Lister.
Yeah.
Debo from Friday.
Right, yeah.
And the president from The Fifth Element.
I don't know any of these things. But
you don't know The Fifth Element?
I don't know The Fifth Element.
Taylor, how have you not seen this?
I'm sorry. Another time.
I don't know any of these words.
Oh, Fifth Element is so good. Well, that's another
time. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, the stereotypes they go into. I mean, I think these movies... There was an article written that was like, is Batman a fascist? And I think if your only experience is with these movies, yes. Absolutely.
No one's Batman. These movies and Frank Miller's Batman.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Very paranoid, very willing to morally compromise. And to be fair, like, Batman's put in a bunch of situations that I'm like, what would I do? But you know, if I sat there for about an hour, I'd figure it out. Especially with Batman's, like, idea. And, like, the Joker, again, like, really compelling things from the Joker when he says, all of your strength and you can't do anything to
Yeah.
him. That's such a great moment. But again, it's like, we glorified the Joker in this film so much. Mm-hmm. And again, context, Heath Ledger had just passed away, and there was a lot of glorification going into him as an actor. Well-deserved, he's a great actor.
Absolutely.
But, like, it really clouds this movie, as every single one of these films was very clouded in some sort
of offset
controversy.
Yeah, it's like, whose side are you taking?
Well, I think part of that is just that, I mean, this is maybe my biased opinion, but I think that this Batman is just not a very compelling character. Like,
that's the frustrating thing, too, because, like, Christian Bale is a great actor, Batman and Bruce Wayne are great characters, and I don't think Batman is ever, it's the same thing with the Tim Burton movies, I don't think Batman is the important part of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's more about the ideas and the themes and the villains to an extent in these movies than it actually is about Batman.
Yeah, and that's definitely a big problem.
Yeah, and it sucks, too, because, like, there's so much great area to work with Batman and Bruce Wayne, and there's like, no, let's make this movie about anarchy. Let's talk about chaos. Which is cool, but at the same time, like, you've got a fucking great character with a very rich history to pull from and influence and even make your own, and your decision is to make him just an idiot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's actually, Pete Holmes did a really great series of Batman sketches where basically he's like doing scenes from the Nolan Batman and is playing them up if Batman was like just a complete fucking idiot. like there's one of them actually from this where it's the scene at the end with Two-Face where he's got Gordon's boy hostage, and every time he turns his face, like, he turns it one way, he thinks it's Harvey, he turns it the other way. Like, he does it at, like, object permanence, whatever it is. Batman can't put together that it's all the same person. And so many are like that. And again, like, if somebody, like I said, I do enjoy this trilogy, but Pete Holmes fucking knocks it out of the park, like, all of those. Like, and a lot of them, like, make fun of, like, how ludicrous, like, some of the twists are and stuff. After we finish Dark Knight Rises sometime, I'll have to show you these. They're really great. Especially for Dark Knight Rises, there's a lot of them. They're just like, hey, remember how stupid this plot hole is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I have to ask you guys. First I'll preface with, I think whoever wrote the script, I guess it's Jonathan Nolan.
Jonathan Nolan.
Yeah, together. Has a major problem with numbers. This is something my dad pointed out, that a bunch of times they go, like, five people are dead. It's like, did you watch this movie? 85,000 people are dead. Everyone's dead.
Yeah, like, somebody, like, this is like, oh, five people died.
Yeah.
Oh, how many of your friends did I kill? Six?
Yeah.
It's like, no, you killed way more than that.
And then on the ferry, this happens another time when, like, we see shots of, like, five people, and then those people in the background, but then there are 500 votes, and they counted them almost immediately. Like, apparently 500 votes were just dropped into the hat, and they wrote, blow them up or don't blow them up. Yeah, and he just, like, flip. Yeah, and then they end up with a ridiculous number there. So that was all silly.
Yeah.
But just in general, like, would you guys, confronted with someone saying, turn yourself in, or I'll keep killing people, would you turn yourself in?
Like, just in general, or if I was Batman?
I mean, if you were Batman, like, let's try and walk through one of these ridiculous Nolan moral dilemmas.
I mean, clearly, I wouldn't. I spent my entire life training to become Batman. I came back because I thought the city needed Batman. I absolutely wouldn't turn myself in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I mean, as Rachel said, my girl, like, the Joker obviously, like, isn't going to stop killing people when Batman's off the street. And so it's like, you could turn yourself in and he could not kill people and your name, and you could, like, protect your honor, or you could just fucking get him and stop him from killing people for the rest of his life.
Right, yeah. Just find him. Like, after you've landed on the car, get up and stop him from leaving the goddamn
Go back up there.
Just
grapple
shoot him
up.
In the goddamn
like,
face.
Where'd he go? It's like, oh, Batman left the party. Guess we'll take the elevator back down and we'll go Joker another day or whatever.
And yeah, and presumably he was just like cuddling with Rachel in the car for the next like 3 hours
like,
and couldn't take
I'm so lonely.
Just, ow, I'm pretty sure there's broken glass in my hip. Shh, it's love. but I think that like that's one of the things that did get accurate. There's actually a really great storyline in the Batman comics called Bruce Wayne Murderer and Bruce Wayne Fugitive, where Bruce Wayne gets framed for murder, escapes jail, and decides, like, he basically renounces his identity as Bruce Wayne. He's like, I'm just gonna be Batman now. Like, Bruce Wayne is dead. Like, because, like, he realizes, like, that Batman needs it, and of course, like, his, like, all his colleagues, like, Robin and Nightwing and Alfred and everyone closer are like, well, no, like, Bruce Wayne is a person, too. Like, you're both of these people.
Yeah.
But, like,
Batman and Nightwing get into a huge fight, fist fight, brawl it out. It's super cool. And I think, like, Batman cycles between, in the comics, between being a huge asshole and being a nice, benevolent guy. And so, like, it's almost, like, yearly. Like, this year, Batman's a huge asshole, and then he realizes that he was a huge asshole, and then he's nice and adopts Tim Drake, and then he's a huge asshole.
And then the next year, Ra's al Ghul almost kills the Justice League because one of his contingency plans leaked.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So just dumb shit.
Yeah, it's across the board.
Yeah. Talking about Rachel, what'd you think of the casting change? Maggie Gyllenhaal pops in for Katie Holmes. I guess probably because of the Tom Cruise craziness, but apparently they were just dissatisfied with how Katie Holmes did the part of Rachel.
Which is unfortunate, because I mean, I do think she was good in the first one.
I think she's fine. I think she
like, I honestly, like, aside from, like, the bullshit with Tom Cruise, and I like Tom Cruise in this, despite all the fucking craziness. Like, he jumped on a fucking couch and yelled on Oprah. Who gives a shit? Mission Impossible is still fucking awesome. Like, what does that matter?
Yeah.
But anyway,
I feel like, I'm not sure, because I liked Katie Holmes in the role, but I also like Maggie Gyllenhaal in the role.
Oh, yeah, Maggie Gyllenhaal's fucking fantastic.
I'm trying to remember, because I mean, she's a great actress, but I didn't feel that Katie Holmes, like, I think Rachel had more screen time, it seemed, in this movie.
I think that's probably accurate.
I think there was more screen time to go around. It's just a longer film as well.
Well, then, like, she was a much more, because like you said, in Begins, Rachel was there kind of to spout these ideologies and set Bruce on the right path for justice instead of vengeance. And in this movie, like, she's his reason to stop being Batman and to get Harvey Dent to, like, be the hero that Gotham fucking needs.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I thought that, I mean, I think that maybe Gyllenhaal was a better fit for that role just because it was, like, more, I feel like it was a harder acting job.
Yeah,
this film.
It's much more, the character's much better fleshed out in this movie, too.
Right, and so I feel like, I mean, I think that Maggie Gyllenhaal's a better actor than Katie Holmes. And then also it's a plausible, just, like, brunette female to brunette female. Like, if you didn't, you know, the space between the movies, like, a lot of people, I'm sure, didn't really catch that switch as...
Yeah, or
a lot of people didn't see Batman Begins, that's all.
That's true.
Right. I mean, so that's also very important to realize that they knew that they had that flexibility.
Yeah, definitely.
I wasn't like, too torn up by the switch. I thought the character was still, like, the same character to me.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't know. I thought they both played it really well.
Yep. I still don't like the character of Rachel.
I love Rachel.
Yeah. And so it still didn't really matter too much to me, the shift. I mean, I remember sitting in the theater and being pretty unfazed when she blows up. I did not care very much. I didn't think I was given too much of a reason to care. And certainly, like, if we're saying Rachel's ideology was the reason that she was in these films, she's given a lot less to do in this because we're so busy listening to the Joker's ideology.
Yeah.
And we're so busy listening to Alfred's Saws of a Tangerine story. Burned down the forest. Yeah.
Burned down the Underground Railroad.
Yeah. Burned the forest to the ground. It's ridiculous. He gets to say ground again.
Yeah.
Presumably because of how funny it is when Michael Caine says ground.
Some people just want to watch the Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I completely lost what I was going to say. I do. One of the things that I liked that kept coming up, one of the things that I think that they absolutely got right with the Joker too, is every time he tells the Scar story.
Yes.
And how it changes. Like, that's so great. Because, like, that's another thing where, like, there's, like, what supposedly is accepted canon, like, for the Joker's origin story, but it's also changed so many times. Like, mm-hmm. So, like, there's that unreliable narrator, like, except it's not an unreliable narrator. It's just how his brain works.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because, like, one of those very... Like, the first time he told it, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then he tells it again. I was like, wait a minute. Okay, so he's just a psychopath. He's just a liar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I loved Ledger. In the first scene and then even in the second one.
Yeah.
The first time he tells it and then the second time he tells it. But the first time you can just, like... see his gears turning, and I know that was probably scripted, but it felt like Ledger was making that up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like on the spot, and he was just like, "What am I going to tell this fucker about my scars?"
Yeah,
you know, like,
kill him.
You can tell that he like it. You could just see the Joker like just coming up with that story and just mm-hmm. enjoying that like improv-y experience telling his victims about his scars.
Well, the Joker actually is a failed comedian in Alan Moore's.
He's a
hacky failed comedian who gets called in to do this one job that's supposedly a guaranteed thing based on his previous job, and then he falls in a vat of chemicals and his partners are killed, and then his wife dies is like the main thing on the same day that all of this happens. His wife dies and they make him go through with the crime anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like the whole concept of, you know, you're one bad day away, that is what every single one of the Joker's speeches are about. Like, it was this one bad time when my father went off crazier, and it was this one time when these criminals caught up with my wife. Mm-hmm. Like, it is, each one of those is just like this one bad traumatic experience. And we do know that that's what happened to the Joker. It doesn't really matter the details.
That's what this movie gets across.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then, of course, I do like the duality of that, because then on the opposite side of the coin, Bruce Wayne clearly had one very bad day, and then completely went the opposite end of the spectrum with it, which is why those characters like are so great. Like they complement each other so well, and it's so disappointing that Heath Ledger passed before this movie came out, because he even has that speech at the end. Is like, I think we're destined to do this forever.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my god, like where will they go in the next one? And then, oh, I guess nowhere.
Well, yeah, and not mentioning him at all was lame. Like, they could have mentioned something. They said it was, like, out of respect. But, like, it's respectful to say, remember that awesome fucking villain?
Yeah.
He's on the loose somewhere. Like, that was a cool thing. So we never really know what happens to the Joker. He just, in all of Bane's plans, Bane doesn't do anything.
Yeah, like, it never occurs to Bane. It's like, oh, yes, the Joker!
Yeah.
Bring him in the mix.
Yeah. Yeah, with all the craziness he lets loose. The Joker has to be out.
Yeah.
He lets everyone out of Arkham and everyone out of Blackgate. Yeah,
like, now the Joker just went to a hotel and just practiced throwing cards into a hat like fucking Bill Murray's Groundhog Day.
So, one of my favorite things about Batman in general is that I think that more than any other superhero, who oftentimes villains got thrown at, you know, these superheroes because it's like, what's a colorful villain with a crazy origin story?
Yeah.
They just make these up and they keep churning them. But Batman keeps having these villains that come to the top, and all of them are, like, in some ways, like a mild perversion of his case.
Yeah.
And that's why we can get these really cool things. So, like, Scarecrow, you know, the Scarecrow is somebody who is absolutely obsessed with fear. So is Batman. Batman wants to use it to, you know, strike fear into the hearts of evildoers. Scarecrow wants to strike fear into the hearts of everyone. And then you got, I'm trying to think of the best villains.
What, you get like
Two-Face.
Like characters born out of some tragedy or some terrible
definitely
thing.
Two-Face is all about justice. Batman's all about justice. Two-Face is blind. You know, it does not matter. Life is coming for you. Death is coming for you.
Yeah.
I'm an agent of either one, whatever the coin says.
Exactly.
And Batman obviously tries to cling to these values. But the Joker's the coolest one because I believe that Batman, fundamental character trait, just wants to see people live. Fundamental character trait for the Joker, just wants to see people die.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, there are all these other nuances that come in comic books and movies, but, like, that's the true nature of it. So, like, Batman as a black and white character works in that way for me.
Yeah.
I think that these things can be boiled down to these similar themes.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah,
I don't think we're gonna top that analysis.
I've had like 15 years to come.
Yeah,
up
no, with no, 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 no. That's a good point to wrap it up though.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're gonna wrap it up there. So thank you, Taylor, again for co-hosting.
No problem.
Thank you, Eric, for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Join us next time as Taylor Reinhardt and I take Erica Van Hyde through Dark Knight Rises, the final installment in the Dark Knight trilogy. Be sure to like the page, How Have You Not Seen This, on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Send any questions or comments for the show to How Have You Not Seen This Podcast at gmail.com. And we'll catch you next time.